This morning we are pleased to have with us Dr. Shirley Bergman. She teaches at Concordia Teachers College in Seward, Nebraska, and she has her PhD from the University of Nebraska. Her work now centers in the Lutheran Institute on Aging. She is the director of that institute, and she travels, speaks, because she believes that it is a critical issue for all of us in our society to be able to minister and care for the aging. So much so that she hates to travel, she hates to fly, but she still does it. She flew here to be with us from Phoenix, and she's leaving again tonight to go to speak to another conference. She is married and has two children, and we are very pleased to welcome to Concordia Seminary Dr. Shirley Bergman.
Thank you very much. It is a privilege to be here in God's country, and I am trembling as I face this august group this morning. I do have a son-in-law and my son who are lawyers, and so at our house we're often listening to lawyer jokes, and I thought it might be helpful if we had a couple of preacher jokes, okay? And you've probably heard these, so bear with me, but laugh anyway, okay? The first one is this. What else would you expect from Lutherans? Now, I'm going to be using a lot of overheads, and so it might be helpful. There is some room up here, and if you want to move, please feel free to do so. There was a great ecumenical meeting held in a building which caught on fire. The Baptist said, "Where's the water?" The Congregationalist said, "Every man for himself." The RC said, "Let's take another collection." The Christian Scientist said, "There's no fire." The Quaker said, "Some good will come of this." And the Presbyterians appointed a chairman who was to form a committee to study the situation. The Episcopalians formed a procession and marched out, grand style. The Methodist said, "This is of the devil." And the Lutheran studied the situation and nailed a list of recommendations to the door. And I'm sure you've heard the one. I had not heard this. We had someone come to Seward a couple weeks ago, and she was talking about parents who gave a dollar to each of their three children to put in the collection plate. So the 10-year-old put his in, the 8-year-old put his in, and the 6-year-old rolled it up and put it in his pocket. And as they went out the door and were greeting the pastor, the 6-year-old gave the dollar to the pastor, and the pastor said, "You don't have to do that." And the little one said, "Well, everyone says you're the poorest pastor we've ever had." Terrible. Really, one objective this morning in the short time that we have together, and that is simply to raise the level of awareness in terms of the fantastic possibilities that we have in aging ministries today. That's the number one goal. And what I'm going to be doing is following the outline, pretty much as you have a very simple outline in front of you. And so we're going to move through this rapidly so that we do have time for questions. You have a bibliography, and on that bibliography you should have, and I don't have a copy of that, and it's been a while since I put that together. I think you've got Ken Dykewald on there. Thanks, Dean. I think you've got Ken Dykewald in terms of Age Wave. Is that on there? Yeah, okay, number one, very first one. If you haven't read that book, get that book. It's the hottest seller, and Dykewald is moving around the country picking up $25,000 or more for speaking engagements because he's working with the business community. It's a powerful book, and what it does, he picks up on the potential of older adults as well as the boomers, and he is saying aging is going to be in. It's no longer going to be conceptualized as something negative. Now, it's interesting, as we were walking out of chapel and we were going against the tide of students, and I could hear the little aging jokes people were talking about coming to this particular presentation. And I want to share some of those areas, and let's begin in this way. Would you please count how many years away from 65 you are? Either it. All right. How many years away from 65 are you? Everyone's got that. Okay. Now, women, would you please add 19 to that number? And men, would you add 15 to that number? Take that sum and add it to 1991. And for those of you that are over 65, you would take that sum of 14 and subtract that on the other side of 65. So in other words, if you were adding 15 to that number, if you're male and you're 67, you would add 13. Okay? All right. What kind of numbers do we have? How many are right at 2,000? Anyone in here? What do you have? 2001. Anyone? 49? 2049. How many of you are 2040 plus? Would you stand? Thank you. Those are the national stats today. And in fact, I could not put my finger on the one overhead that I have, which says the longer one lives, the greater their statistical averages go up. And the Wall Street Journal said on Monday of this week that there is no reason biologically why we cannot have the majority of the population reach 95. Another George Burns. No reason why not biologically. And in fact, aging, the negative aspects of aging are attributed to our poor lifestyles. So that 80% of the negative aspects of aging in terms of physical declination may be brought on by smoking, drinking, so on and so forth. Overeating, overindulgence of some sort. Okay. Well, what does this mean in terms of aging and the implications for that? So keep that in mind, your own aging. Now, the next question I would ask, as you think about aging, would you please think of three particular concepts, words, or adjectives that describe aging? Three, as you think about the process of aging. All right, would someone share one? What do you got?
Retirement.
Negative or positive?
Positive.
Retirement positive for you as a boomer or a buster? Anybody here? See that as positive? What do the younger people think about in terms of retirement?
Resting, relaxing.
Sure. And?
Time.
And Social Security many times, right? Paying for retirement and older retirees. What else? What else came to your mind?
Dependency.
Absolutely. Another one.
Loss.
Loss. Another one.
Experience.
Experience. Great. Okay. Great. All right, good. We're beginning to roll. I want to share with you some of the concepts. For the first time since 1776, the U.S. will have as many older adults 65 plus as teenagers. Older adults today number 30 million strong and will grow to 65 million in 2030. Now, that's not far away when you think about those of you that are going to be living 20, 40 plus. By that time, older adults will comprise more than 20% of the population, and one out of every five will be over 65. Today, octogenarians, those 80 plus, are the fastest growing segment of society, and by 2000, the numbers are going to double. By 2050, one in 20 will be over 55, and today we have more centenarians, people 100 or older, and they will be healthier than ever before. The latest census was 32,000 Americans who are at least 100. Now, this is the one I want to talk about. Only 5% of older adults are institutionalized, and while predictions indicate an increase in numbers, the percentage will remain fairly constant. As we begin to talk about the myths and realities of aging, one of the areas that we must be very cognizant of is the biomedicalization of aging. Because what has happened in this country, we think about aging as a medical problem. The practice of aging is seen and done as a medical problem. It shapes the discipline, the profession, public policy, and changes the public's perception. And so what happens is aging is conceptualized in pathological terms. Lay people see aging as decline, disease, and decay, and that's reinforced by the family, by the doctor, and personal belief. Now, what this means for us in the church, the implications are negative self-fulfilling prophecies. If we believe that old age sets in at 65, that delimits any kind of concept of later life vocation, because we begin to take on the sick role internally as we age. And if we believe we are old at 65, consumptive leisure is the result. And that's what brings us to rocking chair theology, which we'll talk about in a little bit. So the biomedicalization of aging, what does that do? Well, it brings on thoughts like this. I tried to pick up a greeting card a couple weeks ago in Lincoln. What's my secret here? As I looked at the cards, I really could not find cards. And what I found was oil of old age. What's yours? That's ageism. He's out of diapers for the second time in his life. Here's a kiddie menu for all kids under 10 and over 65, so on and so forth. And some of us might relate to that one. Blanche's bowel is irritable again. Okay? All there in the literature. Ageism. Ageism is prejudice against older adults, and gerontophobia is a pathological fear of aging. Now, if we are made, and as we know we are made in the image of God, imagine what that does to society and what that does to the people sitting in the pew. That delimits ministry. It's just incredible how it changes. All right, I'm skipping part of my outline here. Aging becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy in terms of this particular area with the biomedicalization of aging. I want to just show you the baby boom generation and what has happened here. Today, we hear so much about this baby boom generation, and it's going to impact us until they die. The reason for that is they impact strongly the generation before and the generations behind. Here you see the baby boom generation in 1910. Here you see cohorts as they are depicted from 1910 to 1987. And all I want to show you is how the baby boom bulge, and here we had 3 million, which began in 1946 to 1964, and just about 1954, where you saw this huge intersection here of almost 4 million births. But now look at the oral contraceptives and legal abortion. See that dip there? No one talks about the loss of population there, and I'm talking now just in terms of financial implications. And all of a sudden, we're going to be saying, what are we going to do? The boomers are frantic. In 2010, as they begin to retire, we are going to face a financial crunch 10 years later. We don't talk about all of the people that are gone, all of the lives that have been lost. Some people have started to lift that up, but certainly not society. This is the way it was in 1960. Here you see the boomers. This is the silent generation. I don't know where the rest of us are here on this, but one thing I want you to see. Here, we're conceptualizing this in terms of millions. Notice the 85-plus here group. We don't even make a half a million with the males, and we're just about three-quarters of a million in 1960 in terms of females. Look at the boomers now, who never trusted anyone over 30, and now they're 40 in 1985. And notice here, we're not quite at 1 million for males, but look what's happening here with the females. We're just about at 2 million. Look what's happening here in 2010. 2010, the boomers now are retiring. Here's the silent generation. Notice what's happening in the older age group, 85 plus. Let's take a look at 2025 so you know what to expect there. And you can see the boomers now are 75 and so on. And then notice what's happening. We've got just about 3 million males, and we have just about 7.5 females in 2035 of people over age 85. And let's put this all together. This is the way we looked in 1935, the Black Pyramid here. And now you can see how the cohorts have elongated. Okay. Just one word about that 85-plus group. Today, the majority of older adults over age 85 are not in poor health or have organic brain disease or suffer from few social networks, are not institutionalized, and do not report that life is unpleasant. That's the reality of aging today. On the other hand, we have people who are in poor health and who do have disease and so on and so forth. But heretofore, the church has put its efforts into caring for frail older adults. And we are changing today. We certainly will have frail older adults. There's no question about that. But we are changing today in terms of our expectations in aging. One of the areas that we want to talk about next would be the age wave expectations. Age 65 is no longer old. The APA says that if you are 65, you are really 10 or 15 years younger. Say, is that good news or is that good news? What do they mean? They mean that we are eating correctly, that we are watching our weight, that we are exercising, so on and so forth. And just a little note here, if you want to make sure that you stay in good shape, for goodness sakes, take your daily walk. That's imperative. That is the true fountain of youth. And I can give you all kinds of research that will just really be impressive in terms of that particular area. Well, what's going to happen now? Here you've got this huge group of older people, 30 million by 2000, who are healthier, wealthier, and more self-reliant than ever before in history, and what's going to happen in terms of age wave expectations is that middle age and older people are going to continue to dominate politics. And you younger people are going to carry the burden of supporting older people. And many of them are healthy older people. And it is predicted by 2020 that a young couple will fully support, both working, one adult. Implications for the church. We have got a tidal wave of people coming along, boomers beginning to retire in 2010. A tidal wave. What are the implications for the church? What does this mean? We had a symposium on aging in 1984. And at that symposium, we had a follow-up at the International Center. Symposium indicated, and this was a Lutheran symposium, indicated that the tidal wave is coming and the church can either be proactive or reactive. I called Earl Cragness, and Earl Cragness is the head of the Interreligious Liaison Office in Washington for the AARP, and he gets around all over with the major denominations. And I said, Earl, what's going on today, and is much changing in the church? And he said, yeah. He said, the LCMS and the ELCA are ahead of the ball game. He said, there are some very bright spots, but he said, the church is really, at this point, going to be reactive. And this decade is the critical pivotal point in terms of helping people, the church, understand this fantastic age group that we have ahead of us. Much of America today is still mentally trapped in the old stereotypes, assuming that people over 60 wear out. What does this mean for us? The secular world is issuing a siren call. Part of that implication is that McDonald's is saying, come and work with us. One of the things that I have found is that people want to be plugged in, and they want to be plugged into something useful. And I'm not necessarily talking about the church. So when you have that siren call to work in the secular world, you're going to go. And that's going to increase. And one of the reasons it's going to increase is that we are going to need older workers. Are we this urgent in terms of our older workers in the church? That's one of the implications. Are we recognizing what we have in terms of servants walking together with us in ministry? Warren Buffett, who happens to be a great Nebraskan, Warren Buffett, who is now taking care of, Solomon Brothers? The financial institution, yeah. He's pulling it back together. He has, he did have a couple years ago, a 94-year-old woman heading one of his companies. And someone said to him, how long are you going to keep that 94-year-old woman working at your company? And he said, I figure she'll reach her potential at 100. Well, what are some of the challenges that we have in the church here? It's just incredible, and I'm going to walk through some of Schaller's things, but before we get to that, I would just like to share with you, 30 to 40 million people live in poverty, and if you want to put a time frame on that, that's more than the population of Eastern Germany and Hungary combined. Half of the children today in the U.S. in urban primary schools will be school dropouts. One of the questions is, what's happening in the church? Is the church today really moving ahead? What kind of problems do we see, or challenges, if you want to rephrase it that way, do we see in the church? We know the tremendous social ills, but what about the church? Where is the church today? Do we have enough workers? Are we walking together in multiple ministries? Well, baby boomer women are in the workforce. The volunteers are not there any longer. We certainly have that 20% of wonder older people who are engaged in ministry. No question about that. I was out in Sun City and I said to one of our LCMS pastors, how many people do you have in ministry working with you? He said, I've got 20%. I've got 20% who will never work. And he said, it's that 60% that I really want to engage and tap. Well, the church has got multiple challenges today. Our seminaries, it was a thrill for me to sit there in that auditorium, in church chapel, and share with you, because I'm used to auditorium in Seward, and share with you the service. And then the thought crossed my mind. Think of the young church professional going out and the loans that he and his wife will face if he's married. We have so much to do just in this particular age, thinking in terms of helping you as you get out in your own ministry, and one of the financial one of the keys would be the financial areas. All right, but now let's talk about some of the bright spots. Have you heard what's happened to LLL lately? Talked to Dale Meyer last week. LLL has an advantage as a 501c3. A 501c3 means a nonprofit organization. And they have that advantage to get into China with the tapes, because the Chinese, who are now, by the way, allowing in church professionals, but heretofore were not allowing in church professionals. So the church tapes that LLL provides to the Chinese families were incredible, because each family has a boombox because of the communist ideology. LLL is working this very old organization, and members don't want, other people are not coming, younger members, and they're very worried about the older population, and yet the Lord opens doors and opens doors and opens doors for this very old group. LWML is concerned also, and we know what a great track record they have. Isn't that interesting? KFUO, the oldest radio, Christian radio station in the nation. Isn't it incredible? The way the new ministries have been opened up with the new satellite base that's located at the International Center, so it's beaming up, and people in St. Louis want to buy or have purchased time on that satellite. Isn't that interesting? The oldest radio station. All kinds of wonderful things are happening. However, we have to have a new vision in our church. And one of those pieces, I believe, is a collective vision of ministry for the lifespan. I was working with a group, a young group, last week, and I said, what is your purpose in life? And they looked at me blankly. And then I said to an older age group, and what is your purpose in life? And I said, would you share that purpose across the table?
Both church groups.
And they kind of hemmed and hawed and, you know, moved around and was so uncomfortable. And I said it gently. I didn't say it pointedly like I am now. It is embarrassing. I could sense that they were unwilling to talk about their mission and purpose in life. These are faithful lay people. And you have to say, how can we have a collective vision of ministry if we don't have it now? Now, you recall your age. You're going to 2040 or 2030 or 2000. Think of your peer group that's moving along with you. And if we don't have that collective vision of ministry, which you're always working on, my goodness, what's going to happen? One of the reasons is that we have a rocking chair theology. The rocking chair theology says, I've served my time. Let the younger ones do it. That's why we've got to have a new paradigm and a new vision. We're called through the lifespan, as we know, for vocation. each one of us is called, as 1 Peter says, to use our gifts. We all know that we're called through our baptism. But, is that really the case? If you went and if you do this in your own church, wherever you are, location, or if you talk with someone outside of this group, can people really articulate why they are here? Some of them may lift up the Great Commission. There's no question about that. But, to tease that out.
Interesting. Very interesting. What's happening? What's happening elsewhere, I first want to share with you, before I get away from this, just one other piece here, and that is, if you look at older adults, I've served my time, older adults spend almost half of their free time watching television. Here you can see the rest of the time, and I'm not going to take that to walk through in the interest of time here ourselves, because I want to share with you this particular piece. And I'm going to slip now to, in the interest of time, before I look at Schaller's models, I want to lift this up with you because I think this is such a healthy piece for evangelism. All of us, as we age, there's a universal phenomenon called the life review, and I'm sure you're all acquainted with that, and if not, you know intrinsically that it's happening. There's a drive to put our life in order, and it's very striking in old age, and we can put that into theological terms. This is in secular terms right now. Later life is a time to look back and integrate the meaning of our life. We have a particularly vivid meaning for the past at some point in later life, and can recall with remarkable clarity early life events. There's an ability to move thoughts from the subconscious to the conscious. Okay? Oops. This allows us to understand our vulnerability and mortality as we reassess the meaning of our life. Our mortality, our vulnerability, as we reassess our life. It can be shared with anyone who will listen. The outpouring is therapeutic. And those who cannot resolve the issues uncovered by the life review may become anxious, depressed, panic, suicide, so on and so forth. And Eric Erickson has talked about developmental stages, which are great. Because what he says is, there's a stage that begins about the 30s and 40s and moves on, where one gets beyond oneself and out of the family and into the church and into the community. You give of yourself to others. Isn't that biblical? Versus stagnation, rocking chair theology. I've served my time. Focus on self. What I often hear from retirees is, oh, I just don't have time. I am so busy. You tease that out. Ask them to draw a circle. Plug in their 24-hour day and do it in a group. You're going to find very little of that time not focused on self. Okay, so that's generativity versus stagnation. Now, back to meaning is integrity as we look at our life versus despair. The suicide rate is going up again for older adults because of despair. Oh, even church professionals need validation in terms, and I'm talking now about not Lutherans, but other groups who say, have I done enough in serving? Think of the implications as we share and listen to one another's life story. How much time will you have as a young pastor to sit out there and listen to someone's life story? Who's got the luxury to say, tell me about your life? But many, many older adults love to talk. Many older adults can be trained in terms of active listening and then sharing the gospel. It's a fantastically fertile field when you think about high-rises, when you think about this particular city, just in this one little area, which is universal.
You see, in our country, when we think about aging, it's on the outside. We don't talk about what's happening on the inside. And you know the boomers now, who are leading the pack, are looking for all kinds of spiritual meaning. They're searching in all kinds of ridiculous places. Wonderful, wonderful area for us to be. I want to just share with you three phases in terms of challenges and opportunities for church work. Number one, the quest for meaning. That's there, and we're not addressing that. Who better can talk about this? We're the only ones who can speak in this with a gospel-centered faith. The second one is the potential for service. And the third one is needs of frail older adults. And it's not ministry necessarily too, but it's ministry with. And so you're finding that the secular world is lifting up all kinds of areas talking about, not ministry, but walking with frail older adults, and they're giving back to the community. Imagine the opportunities for service here. If we had time to flesh that one out, the opportunities blow your mind. This is what Schaller says, and Schaller does the research in the church. In many of the areas, ministries with older adults used to be the approach in the 70s was the fellowship hall, the senior citizen center, and so on and so forth. And then those born before 1920, Bible study, quilting and a bridge and so on. That's exactly what's happening today. Then he says the second approach is today, organized around trips, events, new experiences, meeting new friends. The bus has replaced the fellowship hall. That's ministry too, if you call it ministry. Third approach, interesting approach here. These are young old. You know, young old people are from 50 to 75, and some people are saying you even got to move that up now, 75, because it's functional age, not chronological age. Functional age is how old you think and feel you are, okay? These people enjoy happy marriage. They look forward to retirement. They don't feel a compulsion to be needed. They don't have a collective vision of ministry, and so it's easy to move to a spectator role. They've got good health, enjoy grandkids, and so on and so forth. But look at this. They prefer leisure time that has defined rules, and they will serve in terms of service on a single-purpose task force. No question, that's where to catch people. Have a good income, so on and so forth. Don't want to work here on an intergenerational level. We have so many throwaway kids today. We have so many exciting opportunities just in our own school system, in our own community. We have older couples who could open their doors to kids in the afternoon feeding cookies and milk. People are doing that. We've got older people at Seward who are listening resource people, and they go in and work with the teachers, and if somebody's kitty has died, here sits the older adult. But if some dad has walked out, here sits the older adult. That child can't function in school. All kinds of possibilities, and there are wonderful, wonderful mission stories just related to that. The second group here that I want to talk about are the crew of volunteers who spend two or three more weeks constructing new buildings for congregations or rebuilding churches. The third group is the work crew that spend a few weeks at a mission station or another continent. Just think of the possibilities in that area. We've got laborers for Christ. Small, small crews. And that's one of the best kept secrets. Imagine what could happen. Imagine what could happen in terms of housing for the poor, let alone the church buildings and so on and so forth. It is absolutely incredible. Fourth approach, built around needs of some of the older adults, deliver meals on wheels, visitation, so on and so forth. Fifth approach are for that 20% who are there for Sunday school, who will sew, who will volunteer, who will do evangelism on an sustained basis. And the last approach is based on the concept of a life cycle where you've got bereavement counselors, peers who are widowed or widowers who visit for a year or two after the pastor, other kinds of specialized group. And Schaller says, which audience is your group seeking to serve?
Last one here, retirement patterns. What's happening? People who do nothing. They withdraw, do nothing. Then there's the third age. The French coined this phase where you've got childhood, adulthood, and the third age. Each one brings a positive phase of living. Father Fahey from Fordham University picked up on that with his Institute on Aging and has centered around each one of these and especially on that third age. Now, you might find people in the congregation who meet this. This is the leisure. This pattern depicts retirees who focus on leisure and consumption. Then there's the protest group like the AARP and the Maggie Coons with the Grey Panthers who are protecting the rights. And then the acceptance, characterized by traditional retirement values such as daily long exposure devoted to television. Generational changes in church involvement, summing it up this way. Older adults today are twice as numerous, better educated, more likely to be retired, financially far more comfortable, in better health, living with their spouse, and include a larger portion of persons past 80 years of age than their counterparts of age 60. Stewardship of time. Each of us is enormously diverse the way God made us. Now, this comes out of the gerontologist. The older population is innately productive, but is being socially channeled into less productive, non-productive roles. The gerontologist. And then the gerontologist says the responsibility to change this result lies with each of us, particularly those in economics, government, and other leadership roles. You know, the church is the largest social institution. I'm going to leave you with this picture here. This is Paul Ramirez, and he was lifted up in the Omaha Herald a couple weeks ago. He eats a half-rotten apple. Yeah, while he combs through trash at a garbage dump in Nicaragua. He's worked there alongside his mother since he was six. More than 100 people scavenge daily at the dump, making a meager living off of that. Isn't that interesting? There was nothing else but that teeny little area. It's exciting to be around today in aging. When you think of older adult think tanks, older adult cores. Imagine what could happen in Missouri with older adult cores to pick up the Ramirez's with Third World and Home. Older adult auxiliaries that we talked about with multiple ministries. And older adult resource banks. Older adults as intergenerational builders. And on that outline that I gave you, which I can't find right now, I just listed a number of areas here. We cannot afford the rocking chair theology. When you think about older adults, and I unabashedly say, I believe that older adults are the future of the church, and you are the keys. As you look at your own ageism, and all of us have it because it's so heavy in the culture, and it began in the 14th century, and as you think about that in terms of sin, we all have ageism in us. That impedes ministry because older adults have bought into that key area. Our synod is beginning to recognize this. Walt Schadel, those of you that know him, wants to stamp out ageism because it's going to affect your ministry. Once you are 45, and you're a little scary, and once you're 50, you may not, at this point in time, really be in terms of a call, you know, the divine call and so on and so forth. Nevertheless, pragmatically, there are some other kinds of elements that do happen. There's a really, really fine fellow who is in a city, and he moved up there, and he has been unable to move into a church. And I asked the question, why hasn't he received a call? And then the person who was at the church who was a minister said to me, you know, he's really good. But it's his age. We can't let that happen. And Walt Schadel
He's on the task force, the Nautical Task Force, wants to help educate our lay people in this area. Because, you see, if you're 55 or 50, you certainly don't know anything about youth. You might retire there. And they will have to live with you. Ridiculous! And I'm sorry, guys, but the younger you are, you simply have not developed the way your older counterparts have developed. The older you get, if you haven't rusted out, the better you become. Because our intelligence does not decline. Your sermons get better with age if you've done your homework. And you haven't rusted out. This summer, we got an institute on aging at Concordia, and we had a 72-year-old, and I'm telling you, he was head and shoulders above the younger guys. Simply because he had so much more under his belt at 72, and you could just see that. You could really hear that. It's really powerful. Synod. We got the Task Force on Aging. Look up social ministry. Dick Krinsky's done some great things. The districts are out there plugging, and let me tell you, they plug. Because if you want to have an older adult conference, you may gather together one, but to gather together another one or another one is difficult. Because who wants to go to those older age groups? That's where we talk about servant events. And that's where we talk about collective vision of ministry. So you can see how tough it's going to be in the congregation. I just leave you here with a number of areas in terms of possibilities. And if we think, not in terms of necessarily the old ministries, but new paradigms in terms of aging. Biblical models are there. Moses began his ministry at what age? 80. Thank you, John. Began at 80. Anna and Simeon were serving in the temple in old age. Someone has said that in Luke's gospel, you will find the visionaries in terms of older adults and the prophets as you think about older adults. Anna and Simeon serving in the temple. It's our own ageism that inhibits this new way of thinking about aging. God is with us. He's going to open doors. Just recognize yourself and recognize your own fear of the aging process. The bottom line is death. And as we walk together through our spiritual journeys with God, that's all a part of that great unfolding as we age. To age is to celebrate life. To celebrate being made in His image. I'm 56 tomorrow. And as I stepped up to the driver's license table to get my license renewed, the fellow said to me, "And how old are you?" And I said, 56. And he said, "Lady, you're 55. Anticipating aging. Now, there's certainly some downsides. I'm not talking about that. But the spiritual walk as we move through. Psalm 92, the righteous are like palm trees. They continue to bear fruit in old age. Celebrate your life.
We've got just a few moments if there are some questions. Yes.
Dr. Murphy, I had two questions for you. The first one was, how much does our concept of having to maintain dignity contribute to the old age mindset? And also, is there a style of icebreaker or something like that that can help us when we're in the parish to break down that embarrassment between the old age to tell their vision to the kids?
Well, yes, I'm not sure if you heard that, but he's talking about, you know, dignity and the elements of dignity and how does it work intergenerationally as older adults tell their story to younger adults. I believe that in the educational ministries of the church, we've got to have mentors right along there in preschool. We've got to have mentors there at baptism. We've got to have mentors there with those single women who are having a tough time, resource parents. We've got to have mentors there in terms of confirmation. And that then just moves along because that's a part of aging. So we really meld together intergenerational areas. That is powerful. Pastors hate confirmation ministry, which I hear over and over again. I shouldn't say hate. Let me rephrase that. They dislike that. Say it's tough, okay? My husband would not appreciate my saying that. Okay, but what happens is many times in VBS or confirmation, kids today are not the same kids that they were 10 years ago or 5 years ago. They're really difficult today, and our Lutheran schools are finding that out. If you have aging mentors, if you've got resource people moving along, sitting there, wow, that really helps.
Other questions?
Is there a way to break down the barrier that seems to be evident between the older members of the congregation and the younger members? I've noticed a lot of times they don't like to work together.
Yeah. And I think, again, that's that whole collective vision of ministry and mission. Because I made it as a 65-year-old. Why should I help the boomers? The boomer parents really need a lot of help today. And we can't afford that kind of mindset. So I think it comes back to education again. We've got to think intergenerationally together. No question about that. And so I was working with an LWML group once, and this side said, well, why don't you older people get out, which was unusual, and why don't you younger people let us get in? If we're thinking that way, the ministries are narrow. Good grief, there's so much to be done. Does that help?
Anything else? Peter?
You had mentioned when we were talking about getting older people involved that one of the things is a single topic task force. What are some examples of that in the ministry of the church that we can target and try to get people?
Okay. What you need to do is get the social ministry manual. And in that manual, you will have a number of aging models. You'll find on your bibliography all kinds of really great resources. We have a Bible study on the life cycles that CPH now has put out. Bob Garmatz has written a new tool in terms of how-to kind of stuff. So there's all kinds of pieces. And then come to the Institute at Seward, and we'll work on that.
Have you ever found that the middle-aged or today's parents feel that if the older people are doing something or getting actively involved, they feel threatened or if they're trying to control their lives?
Right. You know, it's really interesting because the boomers, I've been places where boomers say, why should we give to Synod? In other words, control that way. You know, Synod is out there. Synod isn't us. And an older gentleman said to me, what are we going to do? You know, that's the mindset today. Well, I think we've really got to walk together, and we need a lot more education about aging because we are the models. The young old are the models to catch the boomers and help them through. That's why this decade is so, so critical in the 90s. So critical, because the agenda, and it's very hard to predict agendas for boomers. As soon as you say one thing, the other thing happens. But it really is critical that we have in place solid aging ministries. And by that, you know, you can't even use the term aging. You can use older adult, but older adult. No one wants to be an older adult. Well, that's ridiculous.
I can remember at our congregation, I was on the road and at St. John, and we had this excited 75-year-old who wanted everybody's name over 50 printed in the bulletin or in the newsletter. And so we did that. And I thought, oh! And sure enough, flack. You know, because that happened. Why? Because we also had a lady who was dying of cancer and who would have loved to live to be 55 or 56 or 57. Now, the very old don't mind. But see, that's that ageism again.
Well, we thank you very much, Dr. Bergman, for being with us. Next week, our convocation speaker will be Reverend Ralph Blumenberg, our pastor in residence for this quarter. He serves on the Standing Committee for Pastoral Ministry and serves a parish in Indiana. So we will see you then, and thank you again, Dr. Bergman.